Welcome to the Nature Reliance Podcast, where we explore the history and practical experience of the great outdoors and discover new ways to connect with nature. I'm Craig Cottle, your guide through the fascinating world of natural living and survival skills through experiential education and interviews. Today's episode is brought to you by the Nature Reliance School Online Membership, an immersive online learning experience designed for outdoor enthusiasts just like you. Are you passionate about the outdoors? Do you crave more knowledge about disaster readiness, wilderness survival, bushcraft, tracking, and nature awareness? If so, the Nature Reliance School Online Membership is your gateway to a community of like-minded individuals, all dedicated to learning and sharing essential outdoor skills. With the Nature Reliance School Online Membership, you get exclusive access to a wealth of resources, including expert-led tutorials, interactive webinars, and a library of engaging courses, downloadable books, and documents. Whether you're a beginner or an experienced outdoorsman, there's always something new to learn. So don't wait. Click on the link below to join the Nature Reliance School Online Membership today. Embrace the wilderness, enhance your skills, and become part of a community that values nature as much as you do. Now, let's dive into today's episode. George Rogers Clark. The man, the myth, the legend, I guess. I don't know what else to say. GRC is the name of the high school that I went to, George Rogers Clark High School. And I've been interested in George Rogers Clark ever since that time, before I ever knew much about history at all. One of the most famous long knives was George Rogers Clark, and his impact on American history in particular is absolutely immeasurable. As we'll learn as I interview again Mel Hankla here, who also portrayed George Rogers Clark. So if you're returning, you may have heard my interview with Mel talking about Simon Kenton. On this interview, we're going to talk about George Rogers Clark because Mel also portrayed GRC numerous times throughout the last few decades. You're going to find out how important a man George Rogers Clark was to history, what the campaign when they went north was all about. It was just, it's when men were men. I don't know how else to say it. When men were men, floating in chest deep water for miles and miles in temperatures that should have killed them, and it didn't. These were when men were men. I hope you enjoy it. Here again is Mel Hankla talking about George Rogers Clark.
All right. So now we're talking about George Rogers Clark. Same question. Where do we start?
Well,
I went to George Rogers Clark High School.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of the long knives.
All right.
That's part of our logo for my company.
Okay.
So that's where I'm coming from.
Well, we talked when we were talking about Simon Kenton, you know, you asked me about me. I have spent my life as a collector. And as a broker, I've literally kind of made my livelihood more than not as a broker of Americana. I told you earlier that we had started, my father was in World War II. Mm-hmm. He was a sergeant in the Air Force and a pilot and flew. When they come back home and opened up the sporting goods store and the boat motor ship in Jamestown, Kentucky in 1955, business was good. Business was booming. Him and my mother, I think, had a wonderful relationship. I know they started out in Cincinnati. They eloped, and both of them had been raised in Casey County up by Liberty or outside of Liberty. And I know my kids loved to get my mother kind of wound up when she was 90 years old or something. She would always say the most beautiful thing in the world that she'd ever heard was my father walking through Crosley Field. Their first job was a hot dog and beer stand in Crosley Field. And she said for my dad to walk through and yell, "Hot dog, hamburger, Hootie Pole," selling Hootie Pole beer, you know. So my kids loved that. However, the only tumultuous time that I can remember and my mother and father's life literally had to do with George Rogers Clark.
Interesting.
And it had to do with this dagger. I'd also mentioned to you earlier that, you know, the first job that I had was cleaning fish, and that a gentleman by the name of Charles Landrum had was basically even my contact. He was taking the fish eggs out of the spoonbill catfish and selling them for me. He was more like a uncle or even a grandfather than he was just a friend of the family's. He was a lawyer. The Cron family, which is George Rogers Clark's brother-in-law's family, William Cron. You'll want to pronounce it Crogan, C-R-O-G-H-A-N, but it's a Gaelic name. So it would have been pronounced Cron. It was, you know, with a deep brogue. The family had two knives. They had a long knife, and they had this knife. And they had been at the Filson Club for a lot of years. Somebody died. Members of the family got pissed off. So, Charles Landrum was their lawyer. So, what he had suggested to the family was, is, okay, this stuff's going to be expensive. What you need to do is to give one to the Filson Club, but you're going to have to sell one in order to come up with a value. And you can, the one you sell, by gifting the other to the Filson, you'll counteract the taxes, the capital gain taxes. He had tried to talk my father into buying stock in McDonald's Corporation, and Daddy hadn't done it. So he had always, you know, Charlie had really gigged my dad, you know, said, you know, well, Hank, you'd be a millionaire if you'd have done this, you know. So Charles come to Dad and said, listen, said, you know, I think that you need to consider buying this knife. It's historical. It's documented. You know, you have an interest in this stuff. You know, my father had a pretty large, you know, firearms collection, not really antiques as we know it today, but a lot of stuff out of the 30s and 40s and 50s, Model 70, you know, Winchesters and L.C. Smith shotguns and Parkers and that kind of stuff. So my father bought this dagger for $17,000.
Oh my gosh.
About 72 or 73. And my mother
was not proud of it. Roof.
Oh, they was a big war.
May I hold it?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. But that's what got me started. I mean, you know, that's the piece that's that really got me started on the path. And then from there, and to kind of talk about Clark, let's talk about other people. His second in command at the Pickwa campaign was a fellow by the name of William Lynn. And this is William Lynn's pistol. His name's on top of the barrel. There was a noted Civil War collector here in the state of Kentucky that had this pistol. His father had actually collected that pistol from the family up on the river. And there had been a pair. And the kids had played with them to the point that the second pistols, we, you know, the old lady thought it was destroyed. She hadn't seen it. It hadn't been sold. But these three items I have used from educational standpoint to teach about George Rogers Clark. And I basically call it Clark and his men. Even in my book, you know, there's a whole chapter on George Rogers Clark and his men. This particular Powderhorn belonged to Edward Worthington, who was also an underling of George Rogers Clark's in several campaigns. The horn itself is made, it's part of a group. There's a powder horn artist that we call the folky artist because all of his work is real folky. We don't know who it is, but there's maybe 60 powder horns by this guy that some are dated. The earliest dated one is 1755.
So was that common? A lot of guys would have a particular artist do their horns rather than do them while they were out?
Yeah. Yeah, there was going to be people that was making powder horns, you know, and there's a lot of guys just couldn't, you know.
Sure.
So,
sure.
But this guy, I can trace him from New York all the way to Savannah, Georgia, by his artwork of what he put on the horns. And we don't have a damn clue who he is.
Wow.
But to me,
but this was his.
But this was Edward Worthington's horn. Mm-hmm. It come through his grandson, who was quite a character himself. As you get older, your hard drive gets full, and these names aren't as easy to recall. I'll tell you his name in a minute. This fellow in Harrodsburg that was a. Anyway, I'll talk about it in a minute. Anyway, great documentation. Come out of the family. Mm-hmm. Belonged to the, Anyway, belonged to his grandson, passed down to his grandson. And went, okay. You know, again, documentation is everything.
Sure.
So, and to have his initials on the horn helps a lot, too. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
But, you know, to talk about George Rogers Clark and what he did, and I'll ask the audience this, you know, how many of you that's listening to this, when you hear the name George Rogers Clark, how many of you think Lewis and Clark?
Yeah.
You know, we hear about Lewis and Clark and the Core Discovery and all of that. Well, that's from 1803 to 1806. As I was, again, with the Humanities Council, the second character that I picked up and was doing was General George Rogers Clark. And I would go into Louisville, Kentucky, and nobody had any idea that George Rogers Clark had founded the city of Louisville. They had no idea. You remember seven or eight years ago, there was a big deal. They wanted to rebuild the Third Street Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever hear it called the George Rogers Clark Memorial Bridge?
No.
Well, that's what it's been and been known as since it was beginning. When the bridge was built, it was christened the George Rogers Clark Memorial Bridge.
Wow.
We
just built a new high school in Clark County, and when we built the new high school, they wanted to change the name. They were going to change it to
I understand.
Some garbage. And I'm like, I don't get real vocal locally often, but I went crazy. You're not going to change it from George Rogers Clark. I mean, I went crazy. Because, I mean, local, that's our high school, but people don't have any idea who this person is.
Well, the Clark family, George Rogers Clark and William Clark of the Clark of Discovery, was 18 years younger than his older brother, George. They call this, in the historical nature of things, they're called the Remarkable Clarks. And I helped do a documentary 20 years ago that was entitled that, The Remarkable Clarks. Of course, are you familiar with Locust Grove in Louisville, historic Locust Grove?
Mm, I'm not.
Well, that's where George Rogers Clark died.
Mm.
And it was his brother-in-law's home. They call it, you know, George Rogers Clark's house. Well, he never owned it. It was his brother-in-law's. And his sister, Lucy, is married William Cron, whose family that the knife descended in. But their house stands. I mean, the house, it's called Historic Locust Grove. And it's a wonderful 18th century home that you should go see.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you really should. They have a wonderful, usually about Halloween, they have a nice trade fair, 18th century trade fair there. Hmm. So it's a good time, you know, to go see the place. And they've got a museum. You know, George Rogers Clark literally was given the task by Virginia, you know, to lead 27 pioneer families and settle at the Falls of the Ohio. To kind of claim that territory.
What time frame is this?
1776, okay. 75 and 76. And it was that year that he started doing these Illinois campaigns. You know, he gathered up 170 Kentuckians. Basically, it's even been written, starving Kentucky woodsmen. Hmm. And they call it the Drowned Lands of Illinois. He went down the river about Fort Massac, cut across, and took Kaskaskia to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Then he went and took Cahokia. And then he marched 70 miles across Drowned Lands and took Vincennes. with 170 men.
It's like
it was February. It was, you know, February the 1st and 2nd in 1776. And it was, a lot of times the water was high as her chest. Mm-hmm. And these guys said that they was having to walk with their arms and their powder horns above their heads. And it was so, you know, and in order to sleep, you just had to find a little spot, a little island, you know, to where you could sit on it, you know, and in the morning you'd be froze to the ground. We can't imagine it.
No.
With one blanket and a wool coat, trying to carry a musket and a powder horn.
I can't imagine it.
No, I can't either. I can't either. But if it had not have been for George Rogers Clark and him taking those three forts, the old Northwest Territory, there's a really good chance that the Canadian border would have been starting at Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
That the north side of the Ohio River, when you crossed over, you'd be going into Canada.
Thank you, GRC.
Yeah. Yeah. But so he's overlooked. Everybody confuses him with his baby brother William, but yet with 170 woodsmen, he enlarged America by double. He took America from the Ohio River all the way to the Great Lakes and really set the stage for the War of 1812, because what the British were trying to do was to take the Great Lakes and that waterway system back. So in some ways, the War of 1812 was our second war of independence from Britain, because they were questioning that taking of the old Northwest Territory. So that's what we were fighting for, is to have that whole Great Lakes waterway system.
Hmm.
So once again, if it hadn't have been for the Battle of the Thames, there's a good chance that that whole northern part of America could have very easily reverted back to the British and be Canada today. Hmm. But then you've got his younger brother, 18 years younger brother, along with Meriwether Lewis, through exploration, enlarged our nation double again. So you've got these two brothers that was, you know, have been dubbed the Remarkable Clarks. Mm-hmm. This one family was completely instrumental on the boundaries of America as we know it today.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Hey guys and gals, a quick break in our episode to talk about a game changer in outdoor cooking, the Fire Maple Backpacking and Camping Stove System. Whether you're hiking, fishing, or even prepping for emergencies, this portable pot and jet burner is a must-have in your gear. Best part? It's nearly half the price of a comparable jet boil stove system. Thanks to its leading heat exchange technology, you'll experience reduced boiling times by up to 30% compared to traditional stoves, even in windy conditions. That means more time enjoying the outdoors and less time cooking. Are you ready to upgrade your outdoor cooking game? Click the link in the description now to grab yours. Trust me, your outdoor adventures will never be the same.
So was he, do we know, was he just a fantastic motivator? I mean, how do you keep 170 woodsmen motivated to do that? I can't get 10 guys to do things.
Lafayette wrote, you know, he'd been in and spent time with Clark. He'd spent time with Washington. And he wrote that not even the great Washington had the command of his men that George Rogers Clark had.
Hmm.
So there was something about him. There was some kind of charisma. There was some reason that he could get these men to do these things.
That's incredible.
Leadership, it is credible.
The leadership.
And the whole story about the men, you know, there's such, and that's another thing, you know, the men were all paid with 500-acre land warrants. And a lot of these men, they didn't have any, they wanted money. They didn't want any fight, didn't want any ground, you know. So they traded those things, you know, like it was dollar bills or something today. And in 1782, after the war closed, actually George Rogers Clark's troops had the courthouses in such an array, the land, there was just double and triple land claim cases for all of this different ground. And a guy by the name of William Fleming was appointed by the state of Virginia, we were still Virginia at the time, to come in and settle all the land claim cases that had been left by George Rogers Clark.
Here in what we now call Kentucky.
Kentucky.
Hmm. And that was all surrounding that what's now Louisville area?
Well, it was bigger than that. You start taking 500-acre tracts of ground and multiply that by 170, it gets pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
And see, a lot of that ground then had already been claimed by other people. It was a mess. It left it, you know, that whole thing really left us in a mess.
So wasn't he a surveyor too?
He was.
So did he help them with that, or was he able to, or just wasn't what he was doing at the time?
It's just not what he would have been done at the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, surveying's a funny thing. Almost every trip that come in here was being surveyed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's still one of the things that puzzles me. You know, you'll read these surveys and they'll say, well, today we done, you know, this many yards or a mile and three tenths. How the hell did they know it was a mile and three tenths?
Mm-hmm.
And then that leads you to there's a thing called a waywiser that kind of, you remember when you was growing up, your granny had a plow with a big wheel in the front of it that she plowed her garden. Well, that's what a waywiser looked like. You'd either have one man that was pushing a wheel that registered, you know.
Had like a measuring wheel.
It was a measuring wheel.
I didn't know they used those crazy.
They had to.
I did survey work for a long time. That's one of the most inaccurate things in the world.
Well, yeah, but they had nothing else to go by.
Right,
you know,
sure.
I mean, they couldn't judge that, you know, going across hills and hollers. And, you know, the earliest ones were English. But then I tried to buy one a few years back. It was an American version. God, it was great. It looked like a wheelbar. You know, so it had stuff that the wheelbar, but then the front wheel is what done the measure, and it was all wooden works, like a wooden clock's work. Fantastic. Just a wonderful. And you don't see them.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You just don't see them.
So these 170 men come back, and they're trading 500-acre tracts of land for some corn or something
or whatever, you know, and some of them would have the understanding, well, I need to gather up all of these that I can. But it was just a, you know, it was a way they all got paid, but it just created a lot of confusion. But now in my book, when you get home and go through the book, there's actually a facsimile, well, a picture, a photograph of one of those land grants with Clark's name on it.
So why do you think we have dismissed him if he's such an important character? Was it because later on in life he kind of my understanding is he fell apart later on. Is that true?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. And I'm gonna say this way. Okay. Me and you've just met, but I've known your people. I've known your uncle, especially your Uncle Jimmy friend, what's your daddy's name?
Frank.
And him and Jim was partners on the farm, right?
Yes, sir.
What's your other uncle's name?
Bobby and Tommy.
Okay.
Bobby's the one that worked at Boonesboro.
Okay. So I've known Bobby and your Uncle Jim, your two uncles, for years and years and years. They knew me when I was a heavy drinker.
Hmm.
And in 2003, I quit. But for years and years, I was a heavy drinker. But I still did a lot of things.
Hmm.
And I constantly will run into somebody and they'll say, boy, I'm sure glad you straightened up. Well, okay. What do you mean? Well, you know, you was drinking heavy. I said, well, okay. But I never got a DUI. I raised a family. I wrote a dozen or more deep articles. You know, I did a lot. But for some reason, there's a lot of people. Now, Uncle Jimmy especially and Bobby, both of them knew me, and they appreciated what I did, drinking or not.
Mm-hmm.
But people that don't know you get it in their mind that whatever you did while you were drinking was disqualified. It didn't matter. And I think that's what happened to Clark. And literally, when I was portraying George Rogers Clark, it's funny. You know, I'd read, you know, that he was an alcoholic and was a heavy drinker. I got it in my mind. I wanted to portray these characters like them. And I got it in my mind to do Clark. I needed to have a buzz. So there's a lot of times before I went on stage, I'd drink three Heineken beers pretty quick.
Really?
To get that frame of mind. I wanted to have that same, you know, that same attitude, that same little buoyancy, you know, that he might have had from drinking. And they, you know, it's written that in his later years of life, that you could tell if you walk down the streets of Louisville, Kentucky, you could tell by a man's gait whether or not he'd been with George Rogers Clark on that Illinois campaign. Well, some people took that as alcohol. Well, it wasn't alcohol. It was rheumatism, because all of these days after day in this freezing water had destroyed their joints of such. Yeah, they might be drinking, but that was the only relief that they had. And it's like with George Rogers Clark. I feel like that he is his accomplishments have been ignored because he's went down in history as a drunk, as an alcoholic. And see, I overlooked that, and I really feel like that my experience with alcohol, I'm not going to say I wasn't a drunk. I was. I was a heavy drinker. On the other hand, it didn't stop me from being a good father. Mm-hmm. It didn't stop me from keeping a job and being a good work hand. You know, I mean, I didn't just crawl into a bottle and stay somewhere. And George Rogers Clark didn't either. Mm-hmm. He started having strokes when he was 58 years old. And it was the last 9 years of his life. He couldn't do anything. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people looked at that and even tied that in with his alcoholism. But I wanted to tell his story. It's like I was talking to you about Simon Kenton. I wanted to tell as many people about Simon Kenton's story and brag upon him, and would do my best to try to get his name to be as household of a word as Daniel Boone. George Rogers Clark, the same way. I wanted people, when you heard George Rogers Clark, you didn't think Lewis and Clark. Mm-hmm. You immediately recognized this wasn't his little brother on the Corps of Discovery. Mm-hmm. So that was my goal, I wanted to tell this man's story and how important that he was, again, to the Western migration of America and the settlement of Kentucky.
So he was a warrior.
He was a warrior.
How long was he? Was he primarily officer, general, or was he?
He was made, you know, he died as General George Rogers Clark, but now he operated as a major for quite some time. Hmm. And even when he started at Louisville and settled Louisville, he was a young man. I don't remember exactly, but I'm going to say in his 20s, mid-20s, or even younger 20s is when he brought this group of people in. And he would recognize things. You know, it's like this William Lynn that owned this pistol. You know, he sent William Lynn to New Orleans to gather up supplies to bring back up the river for his Illinois campaign. You know, and it's like Edward Worthington, you know, the same way, you know, he knew how to pick out these good men, and he knew how to divvy out responsibility and how to get people involved in order to end this common cause. But they even say, you know, that one of the reasons is they was going from Kaskaskia over to Vincennes. They had a little drummer boy that literally was floating around on the drum, and they was kind of pushing him through. They put him on top of, you know. But stuff like that. Well, and another thing that you don't, what do you know about cricket, the game cricket?
I know nothing about it.
Valley Forge, you know about Washington and the winter at Valley Forge? Mm-hmm. Well, in order to keep the spirits of the men up, they played a game called cricket. Mm-hmm.
I know it is a game. I don't know how to play it or anything.
This is William Fleming's Powderhorn. And William Fleming was known to be an avid cricket player. So one of the things on his horn is a guy with a cricket bat slung up over his back. George Rogers Clark played cricket. These men
at Valley Forge?
Well, no, not at Valley Forge, but with his on his Illinois campaign. In order to keep men up, they played this stuff. You know, it wasn't, you know, they tried to come up with things to make life livable.
Sure.
You know, you know, if you were froze to death, you had to do something, try to get warmed up. And
Cricket. cricket.
Cricket, the game, you know, which really evolved into today's baseball, you know.
Right.
So, and until I was able to get this powder horn, I had no idea. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what this was. Boy, by the name of Alan Gutches, it's a curator at the Fort Pitt Museum, was looking at the horn. He said, that guy's playing cricket. And then I started doing the research and finding all of the documentation of where that it was big. I mean, it was something that they were doing with the men to raise their spirits, give them some kind of activity instead of them sitting around a campfire mm-hmm. all
Feeling
day long.
Bad for themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Take their mind off of it. Learning how to be
so there's so much more. We sit at this stuff and we sit and you know, like me and you today, we're sitting here talking about, you know, well, what did he do? He went across the drowned lands and they said, what else did they do?
Yeah, that's what I want to know.
What's part of the, and I don't know, mm-hmm. you know, it's little things like that. I know they played cricket because here's a remnant of it.
Right.
It, you know, and that's like this horn is dated 1782. And another thing that I think's great about it, this guy's happy. This guy's dancing. He's dancing a jig and got a drink.
Drinking
well,
some
wine. Well, the war's over. They would have never engraved something like that or even that man with a cricket bat on a powder horn during the war.
Hmm. Yeah, because war was not a time to play.
So you can tell so much by this folk art, this
sure.
stuff, that these personal, you know, these personal artifacts that belong to these different people.
So what else about George Rogers Clark do we need to know?
Well,
was he family man? Did he have a bunch of kids?
No kids.
Zero.
That's another thing. Hmm. Time after time. He was never married. Had a girlfriend once. She was a Spanish girl. Her name was Rachel. And, you know, but they never married. Didn't
so
have any children.
Was it because he dedicated his life to the...
I don't know.
To the cause?
I don't know. Hmm. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. I don't know.
Hmm.
I can speculate, but time after time, I've been in a program, done a program, and somebody come up to me and say, "I'm a descendant of George Rogers Clark."
Oh, really?
Well, you might be a descendant of his brother.
Yeah,
you know, but you're not a descendant of George Rogers Clark
because
he didn't have any children.
Interesting.
So I don't know. You know, he's so no, he's not been a family man.
Yeah.
And I think he was living through tumultuous times. I think he started what he was doing early.
That's a hard life.
Hard life.
That's incredible.
I think he was trying to build a country. You know, I think that you had a group. You know, he was working close enough with the founders of Virginia and the founders of America that he was on a mission to help drive the British out of America. He was on the far frontier theater to where that once again, you know, the British had taken control of all of the waterways from New Orleans to Detroit. So that's why he was attacking these towns, Kaskaskia and Cahokia, and then Vincennes over on the Wabash River, you know, is to gain these waterways back. Because it, you know, without them, we have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was the transportation of the day.
Hmm. So, did he stay in military work, or did he get into politics?
He died as a general. No, I don't know that he ever run for any office. I don't, you know, not off the top of my head. Again, you know, I probably would have been lucrative for me to have sat and done a little research before you come today on this. It's been long enough since I've done the research. I don't remember, but I don't think there was any kind of a political aspirations at all with what he did.
So when he died, where'd you say Locust Grove?
He died at Locust Grove.
What
he
was engaged in his latter years?
I think he was 58 when he died. You know, he died pretty young. He had a cabin. There's actually a George Rogers Clark Park on the north side of Louisville in Indiana. If you cross the bridge and take the first exit and drive alongside the river, I think it's a George Rogers Clark Park, and it may be the Falls of the Ohio Park. But his cabin, they rebuilt a cabin at the location where his cabin was. And he had a mill, so he just kind of hung out there, you know, for quite a number of years. And that cabin has since burned, I think, 4 or 5 years ago. I don't know if they've redone it or not. Hmm. But it was, you know, he trained these men, you know. It's like there was an island out from Louisville called Corn Island, and he started training these men, you know, for this the Illinois campaign. He understood how important it was, but they doing the training on Corn Island because it made a water barrier to keep the Indians and the British mm-hmm. from sneak attacking and coming up on them. Of course, and that island's no longer there. It's been dredged out when they put the lock and dams there at the falls of the Ohio River. Hmm. It's just hard for us to imagine, again, you know, this is 20 years before we become the state of Kentucky. And sure. and America at the time, you know, the far west, you know, we had St. Louis, you know, really hadn't, mm-hmm. you know, there wasn't a fur trade. There wasn't a St. Louis. It was there, you know, it was an Indian village, kind of like Nashville, you know, but Nashville was known as French Lick till, you know, what, way up in the 1780s. So that was mm-hmm. the far western frontier that on the cutting edge of the western migration of America. Mm-hmm. And us fighting the British for it. And their Indian comrades.
So what's the connection? Because how did we get connected there in Clark County to George Rogers Clark? Just pick the name?
Just pick him out? I was going to ask you the same.
I can't find that other than somebody just picked it for the high school name.
There's bound to be a reason. There's bound to be, and it doesn't necessarily have to do with him being there. It may be nothing more than him being a hero.
That's what little bit I asked that question when I was in high school.
Well, but okay, it's Clark County, so I'm sure is the county not named after him?
No, it's named after another gentleman who wow. had daggone, can't believe I've run stupid on that. He's got a home there. He was a governor.
Okay.
But it wasn't after George Rogers Clark. Hmm. Yeah, and my history teacher in high school said it was because he was a great general that we named the high school George Rogers Clark.
Well, same way with Lafayette, you know, and mm-hmm. in Louisville, Jefferson County or something, you know, because Lafayette was so well thought of. I don't know. It's a good question. That would warrant some research to find out mm-hmm. why that was.
What are we missing about George Rogers Clark that we need to talk about?
I don't know. I wish I could remember more of my program that I did on Clark. It's been several years. I tell you, I had open heart surgery in 2020. And boy, there's a lot of, it's not that it's not there. It's just like I'm still sitting here trying to remember who this horn come down through.
Do we know anything about his equipment, his rifle, his knife? I mean,
other than this,
George Rogers Clark's one,
the other rifle. Knife, you know, we call them the long knives, and the other knife is a long knife. However,
this, and where is it now?
It's at the Filson Club in Louisville, Kentucky.
Okay.
But this is almost a leave over from the medieval days. Mm-hmm. They had a thing called a left-handed dagger because the sword was worn on the right mm-hmm. or on the left. And you'd operate the sword in the right. Mm-hmm. They had a dagger on the left to where that if you lost your sword, you still had, or even if you were fighting with the sword, you had a left-handed dagger, you had an arm. And this is, I feel like that's what this is designed after. I think it's been something that he's worn, you know, with a sword, in conjunction with the sword.
Yeah, because that's a killing tool right there. That's not a field dressing tool.
No, it's not for nothing else but warfare.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, fantastic. This has been good.
Yeah, it has been good. Yeah. It's an honor. I wish I was just sitting here kind of pondering, see if there's what else I need to think of.
Tell me some good resources for people to read about George Rogers Clark. Do you know any off the top of your head?
I do. Probably, again, you know, and you're welcome to, you know, to take your camera in a few minutes, but there's so many, you know. There's a couple of books called Conquest of the Old Northwest by William Hayden English, and they're hard to find. Mm-hmm. But to me, that's the best if just for one resource is William Hayden English. Frederick Palmer done Clark of the Ohio. It was good. James Allen, James, There's been a lot written on Clark, a whole lot more written on Clark than there has been Simon Kenton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But again, you can feel free to, to film these or, you know, or take them down to where people can.
I will do that. Well, Mel, this has been great.
Yeah.
I really appreciate
it. It's an honor.
Today.
I appreciate
it
you.
It has been a pleasure talking to you more than you realize.
Well.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. You have a great afternoon. Yeah.
And that wraps up another fantastic episode of the Nature Blinds podcast. I hope today's journey has inspired you to explore and connect with the natural world in new and exciting ways. Before I say goodbye, remember to check out the Nature Blind School online membership. If today's episode sparked your interest in wilderness skills and outdoor adventures, this online community is the perfect place for you to start or continue your journey. You can currently sign up for a year for only $99 and get 2 months for free. Click the link below to discover a world of expert-led courses, engaging content, and a vibrant community eager to share their knowledge and experiences. Whether you're starting your outdoor journey or looking to deepen your existing skills, the Nature Reliant School online membership is here to guide you. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe for more adventures and share this podcast with your fellow nature enthusiasts. Until next time, come on, join in. Let's learn together.